advisory committee. If the board votes to do so, that will begin the next step of the rulemaking process, including subsequent public notice and comment and a public hearing on that. Board has posted the proposed rule amendments to Division 25 on our website, as well as the text of HB 2573. And that is the purpose of the public meeting. The board has not had any other deliberations on this since our last public meeting. So we're going to open it up, and I a member of us are regarding whether or not as part of this rulemaking process, there should be some rules regarding authenticating, I guess, signatures, summarizing them. Please correct me if you want to do that yourself. And that was sort of forwarded on to the Rules Advisory Committee for their consideration, whether we would want to modify at this point as part of this rulemaking procedures any of the temporary rules that have been adopted. The report that we received back from the chair of that committee, Administrative Law Judge Martin Kehoe, was that there were not any, you know, proposed changes to the temporary rule that was adopted. I think it's fair to say at our last public meeting on this, the consensus was that the terms of HB 2570 were fairly prescriptive and straightforward. So in drafting that temporary rule, we really just tried to track the language as best we could for the permanent rule, and then kick that back to the Rules Advisory Committee to see if they had any proposed amendments to that. And having not received any, we scheduled this public meeting to talk about whether we should now propose permanent rulemaking, which again would open up another public comment here. I think I would first open it up to any members of the public who are here today, sort of, or any agency staff that are here, if they had anything they wanted to add to that before opening it up to my colleagues on the board. And it's a small group, so just feel free to, you know, raise your hand and just chime in.
Chair Reiner, this is Diana Moffitt. I am on the Rules Advisory Committee. I was present during the discussions regarding this temporary rule, and I think you were just spot on. The consensus of the group, I think it really was unanimous, is that there was no need to delve into minutiae about the authentication process, that there was already an authentication process that staff have used. And now that does not mean potentially in 3 years or 5 years, the board might start noticing deficiencies and there might be some later amendments. But at this point, I believe everyone was in consensus that it was not necessary.
Sort of clear for the record and in terms of that piece, we do ask for, you know, if we receive a showing of interest, we ask for a list from the employer, and then we do match up that list with the authorization documents that we have to ensure consistency. We do not have any, you know, we obviously don't have signature exemplars from employees that we sort of match up or do anything along those sorts, but that process is confirmed as part of that, that we ensure that the signatures and the names that we have cards for match up. We ask the employer for a list of anyone that would meet the criteria that's set forth in the petition, and we match those up and make sure that those names that we've received cards for are consistent with the list that we have from the employer.
That's correct. I recently went through a petition for change of representation, and I attended the ballot tally, and during that process, your staff was able to identify, as I recall, three ballots that were not validly signed, and those were excluded, and the rest were gone through and matched to the list. So I think it's going to be appropriate in this same circumstance. It's going to be no different. We don't expect the board staff to become handwriting exemplars or specialists.
Thank you. I really appreciate that comment, and I can confirm that our staff is very diligent. Sabrina Dunford, our election coordinator, and ensuring that everything really is spot on in terms of all the information that we received in processing our petitions. I think it looks like you were about to make a comment. Just again, please identify yourself for the record as Diana did.
You're talking to me, Adam?
I am.
Okay. Richard Schwartz, S-C-H-W-A-R-Z. I also am a member of the Rules Advisory Committee and supported the proposed rule with recommendations that came out of the committee. But I, as in the past, you know, I've always been mindful of the rules being written for the ordinary person off the street and not for those highly proficient in the rules and in the larger labor organization. So that prompted a question on 5d of the rule regarding verification if the technology is available, they can verify, the signature can be verified by a prompt confirmation from the petitioner to the signee, if I'm remembering it correctly. And what occurs to me is for card check, the board was instructed to develop a sample if the board could consider whether or not to, not necessarily in the main body of the rules, but make available sample confirmation. I know, and I shared this with the rest of the Rules Advisory Committee, I went to the NLRB's resources and pulled up a bunch of examples, or the General Counsel had offered a bunch of several examples of a confirmation email or letter to, usually email, from the petitioner to the signee confirming the receipt. And it seems like that might be a useful resource, whether as an appendix to the rules or on the website for those looking how to conform to the rules on confirmation.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate that comment. So with those comments in mind, I will turn it over to my colleagues for any observations or comments they wish to make before we proceed.
Member Lasser, I listened to your meeting, which was recorded, and I know that you gave consideration to those comments, and I'm grateful that we've got excellent staff that practitioners on both sides trust to verify electronic signatures using our existing methods.
I have nothing to add, but thank you to the Rules Committee members for attending and for your comments and considering what the board put forward for your last meeting. It's appreciated.
Yeah, and on your observation, Dick, I think that, might be something that we might want to consider as an agency. You know, like you said, it's not uncommon for us to provide, again, sort of non-binding sort of samples of people's views. You brought this type of thing that you might want to consider as a resource to people, even if it's not sort of an administratively required rule or something along those lines. And I think that's something that the agency can have some thoughts to down the line. So if there's no further, is there any other discussion on this? Or I'm going to make a motion here to propose the board issue a notice to permanently adopt the temporary rules that are currently drafted. And public comment period, so sort of a reasonable comment period, given how long this has been sort of out there and circulating. I don't think there's a lot of people in the constituent group who's probably not aware of this, sure that there this has a large public component to it outside of that constituent group. We can deliberate on the time. I don't really have a specific thought on it. My thought is a 21-day sort of period that we can hold a public hearing on November 13th to consider any public comments and accept any subsequent comments at the hearing before moving forward with permanent adoption. And at that point, we can also consider an effective date. Just as a reminder, the temporary rule is in effect until February 24. We could ultimately decide to keep that in place until have the permanent rule effective February 25, or have an earlier effective date for the permanent rule, so long as it meets the criteria set forth in the Administrative Procedures Act in terms of notice. The longest notice is giving 49 days of notice before the effective date to legislators. That's the longest period, is that sort of 50-day period. But we have plenty of room between now and when that temporary rule expires to set an effective date, whether we want to do it, January 1. That's a little bit down the line. So any other comments, though, before I make a motion? Okay, so not seeing any, I would move that for the temporary rule that is in place. There is a second. Is there any opposition? We're all in favor?
Aye.
In favor, aye. Okay, so that motion passes. Would the board care to go ahead and set the time now for the public hearing and the public comments? And would anyone here that's a part of this would chime in on a comment period of 21 days and a public hearing on November 13th, Davis? Math is correct. To consider any public comments.
It's a Monday.
Yep. If that works.
For me.
All right, so we will go ahead and get this notice of proposed permanent rulemaking posted and set up with a invitation to everyone who is on our list to put on our website orally at that public meeting as well. And if there is nothing else, I will go ahead and thank you all for your participation in this and for being here, and go ahead and close this public meeting and wish you all a happy Monday.
Excuse me, Chair Reiner, did you, I'm not familiar with all of the rules, but are you also considering today the removal of the Division 30 fair share thing, or is that just a formality that you don't want to discuss? Because I did want to put one thing on the record about that.
Great. Well, thank you. Well, let's go back and look at this part of, thank you. This is kind of fun. This is, wasn't noticed. And I do want to talk about Division 30 and move that along with Division 25. And just let me just sort of recap kind of what happened with these rules. Danny, you may remember we had this in a prior Rules Advisory Committee. And there ultimately, you had some initial comments that you wanted to raise about that. They were raised, and at the end of that meeting, you said, okay, I don't have any more sort of concerns about doing this. It dealt with the fact that there were a lot of interesting collective bargaining agreements at the time. You were worrying about sort of upsetting the balance of public meeting and hearing notice to finalize that. Those just kind of inadvertently dropped because there were much bigger things that were at issue. So we noticed that, and that's why that got circulated again, to sort of move again the repeal of Division 30 regarding deauthorization of fair share fees in light of the Janus decision, and just go ahead and repeal those at the time. That's sort of the history of that rule. And now
all I wanted is just that, yes, initially I had some hesitations regarding collective bargaining agreements that might have still been in existence at the time. I felt that a deletion at the time was premature, but now because of inadvertent delays, I don't think they're premature anymore, and I just wanted to go on the record to say Diana Moffitt had no longer has any objections, even if they were, you know, if they were worthy of objections or not. I'm just, you know, a little nitpicky on stuff like that. So anyway, so I want you to know, delete away.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I should also formally move as a separate motion to, as part of that permanent rulemaking, to go ahead and repeal Division 30 and offer that same public comment and notice period as we did for Division 25. So I'm going to make that formal motion now. Second over here from Member Glasser, Attorney Director, go ahead and formally close the public meeting. And once again, wish you all a happy Monday, and thank you again for your participation.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Take care.
Thank you.